Joe Pasillo, as always, joined by Joe Racinello. And once more, dear Crusaders, let us go into the breach. And so we got a Joe Racinello. I'll tell you something. I was talking to Joe before the show, and it just amazes me. The more I read the news, and I'm trying to be a really, Joe, I swear I'm trying to be a good Catholic man. I am. Biden's making me sick. Just in general, and what we haven't talked about Biden much, because to us there's bigger fish to fry than that guy, okay? But in the meantime, we're on the Crusade Channel, always on air, always online at crusadechannel.com, the last live radio station standing. If you want to give us a call, our number is 844-527-8723, and our live chat room, the only social media out there worth actually socializing in, is online at crusadechannel.com/chat. Please remember to follow Joe and I on Facebook and YouTube at The Frontline with Joe and Joe. And if you want to drop in a couple bucks, you can find us at patreon.com/frontline with Joe and Joe. Remember, in the last hour, the top of the last hour, we will be talking about Dan Leroy and Catholic Revolutionary Americans.
great book.
So we're going to have Dan on for a little while to talk about his new book and tell you where you can find it. But yeah, Joe Racinello, Biden is, like, I'm not even joking about it. The guy's making me sick. And I'm with Father Imbarato, because now I'm at the point where I'm not going to attribute it to either early dementia or he's just stupid or whatever. He is just out and out mocking us as Catholics. Bill Donahue reported today that they're stepping up their assault on Catholic hospitals. They're going to force Catholic doctors, supposedly. I mean, it's going to go to the courts and we'll see what happens. But they're going to force Catholic doctors to perform plastic surgery that they're calling transition surgery and all that. He's a disgusting human being. It's the only thing that I could come up with about Joe Biden, is that I want to try to be charitable. I want to try to be that way. I certainly pray for him. I mean, I do that. But the guy is just showing himself to be more and more disgusting every day he's in there. And the other thing is this, is that even if he has got some sort of an idea that he might want to do one thing different that his puppet masters are telling him to do, he also knows that he can't do that, because the one time that he goes against him, Joe Racinello, they're going to pull the 25th Amendment on him and yank him right out. And Kamala is going to be, at least supposedly, our president. But the guy's just making my stomach turn. And as a Catholic, I say, I'm going to pull one of his lines, Joe Racinello. Come on, man. Come on. This is, really? You think that the government can force a doctor to perform plastic surgery on a gender-confused person, and you're going to be A-OK with that? And some of the bishops, like Wilton Gregory, have no problem with that whatsoever? And think about, Joe, the souls that are at stake, not the least of which is Cardinal Gregory himself, okay? But Joe Biden, how about the poor soul that's going in for the surgery, okay? Or so-called surgery, okay? It's just a pit of evil, and it really hurts me in my heart, because I say whatever hope I have for Joe Biden gets less and less and less each and every day. I can't stand the guy, man. Come on, man. I can't stand the guy.
Let's just say a quick prayer.
Right.
Name of the Father, and Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Remember, O most gracious Virgin Mary.
Never was it known that anyone who sought your help or sought your intercession was left unaided. Inspired by this confidence, we fly to you, O Virgin of Virgins, our Mother. To you we come, before you we stand, sinful and sorrowful. Mother of the Word incarnate, despised in our petitions, but in your clemency, hear and answer us. Amen. St. Dominic,
pray for us.
In the name of the Father, Son, Holy Spirit. Amen.
Yeah, so anyway, we got a great show for you today. We're going to talk about a lot of things. We'll get to what we can get to. You know, the false religion of environmentalism. I think that's an appropriate description of environmentalism, Joe.
Yeah, Weigel really touches on some important things.
I think you're spot on. Spot on. It's a religion. And we're going to tell you exactly how. And when you hear it, when you hear how he breaks it down, you say, wow, sounds an awful lot like a religion to me. So we're going to talk about that. Woke Coke, you know, just they just keep stepping in it as we go along. Black Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter. According to Victor Davis Hanson, American universities suck. Joe and I agree. We're going to break that down. And if we could get to it, we got a whole bunch of other stories. So make sure you stick around for the full 3 hours. With that, I'm going to hand it over to Joe Racinello, and we will rock and roll on the Crusade Channel.
Let's start off with this one. A post-Christian America is bad news for everyone, says Tyler O'Neill of PJ Media. While Biden promises a kind of partisan unity, his regime has only stoked the fires of division. The partisan rancor is only likely to get worse, but Christians can and should keep things in perspective. Now, this is an interesting statement by Mr. O'Neill. This is what he says. He says, Christianity can be a powerful calming agent in these turbulent times, enabling us to love our enemies, strive for peace with our neighbors, and ease our angst by looking to God for our ultimate satisfaction. Increasingly, secularism is not helping Americans come together, but a revival might set us straight.
Amen.
Now, that is the great reset, if you ask me. God uses everything. You know what I'm saying? And God will use this. Clearly, God willed this to happen, because if he didn't want it to happen, clearly the regime wouldn't be there. What I mean by that is this. We have to look at things through God's lens, and I think that if we do so, there could be an opportunity. Because remember, it's through persecution that the faith spreads.
Well, I mean, that is the way we have to look at it. I mean, if we're looking for an easy way or a convenient way or a non-turbulent way of straightening out this country, I think we're off base. We have to accept that if you're going to fight against these things, I mentioned the doctors in Catholic hospitals, okay? Doctors in Catholic hospitals are obviously going to say, absolutely not. We're not doing that. The hospitals themselves, no matter how bad the church is, I mean, there are instances that we've heard of where Catholic hospitals are doing things they're not supposed to be doing. But officially, as a church, to say, we are not doing this. We're going to have to accept that we're not bending the knee to Caesar. And we saw how that went for the early Christians. They accepted it. It became like what Phil Lawler calls a contagious faith. You know, we're going to be talking to Phil Lawler and having an interview with him soon. It's a contagious faith. In the persecution itself and what we bear for the sake of Christ is what ultimately will, attract people, in our view, to get back on the right path. Unfortunately, the dark times are going to come for us. I mean, they're showing it now. I mean, Donahue pointed out today in one of his emails, okay, you got Becerra is the pit bull dog enemy that we expect him to be. He's spearheading this with the hospitals. Biden is all behind them. Obviously, the regime is all behind them. This is trouble for us.
Oh, there's no question. But, you know, ultimately, God is working through everything. I mean, that's why I think this is a good, you know, introduction to the show. I mean, we have to keep our minds set on that. It's about saving souls. Mm. And, you know, God works in mysterious ways. Always, you know, keep that in mind. And ultimately, I think it will be through the suffering that people basically change their gaze. Think about what happened to Poland. Poland during World War II, I think they lost 1 in 4 people between the Germans and the Russians.
That's pretty devastating.
I mean, that's absolutely devastating. Yet to this day, I mean, I go to a Polish-American church in New Jersey, frankly, because they're devout. I mean, and they do a good job. I mean, ultimately, from what I've experienced in my, you know, in my life, Polish Americans are the most faithful. Polish people and the Filipino people in New Jersey that I've seen, forget about the Italians, forget about the Irish. Sad, but true.
I know.
But the Polish are faithful. Why? Because they suffered. Filipinos are faithful. Why? It's a poor country.
You know what I did hear along those lines about Poland, though, recently, and this is where we have to be vigilant. It's like St. Peter said, you know what I mean? You know, be vigilant, be sober. Your enemy, prowls around the world looking for souls to devour like a lion, okay? Poland went through everything you're describing. Obviously, they were torched by the Nazis, and then they were torched by the Soviet Union, okay? And they got their head on straight, and they are predominantly a Catholic country. But my understanding is that is a very slim majority
that
Catholics have. And it shows you that you have to be vigilant. You just don't establish, let's say, a Christian order in a particular country and think, okay, everything's fine. No, that's something that once you've established it, you have to keep, you have to preserve, you have to pass down the faith. If even 45% of the Poles, okay, don't or want to change their laws on abortion, or change their laws on gay marriage, Poland will be in trouble again.
Well,
just like we are.
Well, how do you stay connected? It's through prayer. I'm going to be honest with you. It comes down to that. And don't think, you know, this goes for all of us, me included, me first and foremost. If we don't stay connected to God through a normal and regular prayer life, we're not going to be faithful. I'm going to tell you that right now. That's anybody. You have to stay connected. You have, just like athletes, just like people, everyone, you know, fitness freaks, they all want to go lift weights every day, run. For 17 years, I ran every single day. You know what I'm saying? Until my knees are shot. They're shot now. But my point is,
this is what happens when you run for 17 years straight. That's why I don't do it, Crusaders.
But my point is, like, you have to do this. You have to stay connected through prayer. It all comes down to that. It's not about you, like almost like a virtue that you're born with. If we don't stay connected to the tree, that's what happens. Whether you're in Poland, you're in America, you're in the Philippines. Because it's human nature to slide back. And it starts slow. The devil's smarter than you. And this is what has to happen.
I agree.
But the only reason why Poland's the way it is because they suffered. And I got news for you. The suffering is going to come in this country. I don't know what form. It could be economic suffering. It could be, you know. It
could be prison.
It could be a lot of
things. It could be a doctor in a Catholic hospital who loses his license to practice medicine that he broke his butt to earn by going through all those years of medical school and being what do they call them when they're training?
A resident.
A resident and doing all that. And then the state, getting back to my disgust with Commissar Biden and his henchman, his Bukharin, Javier Becerra, okay? My disgust is the state will come down on that man or woman and say, we don't care about your Catholic faith. No, we're not going to kill you. No, we're not going to put you in jail. We'll yank your license and you will have wasted 15 years of your life studying and applying your trade as a doctor, and we'll make it so that you'll never be able to help a little kid with a cold, let alone do anything else. That's how they'll bring the hammer. One thing that I would say to you, Joe, I can't help but think in my mind, I think it should be mandatory, just getting back to Poland for 1 second. If I ran Poland, I would make it mandatory in all the schools in Poland that they have to watch the history of Poland in the 20th century, and then ask themselves if they want to have abortion and gay marriage in Poland and see what happened. These young kids, they're unfortunately stupid. And a lot of them, the youngsters are the ones that let's say, rebel against, let's say laws against abortion and gay marriage and everything, okay? They need to get their head on straight unless they want to end up like their grandparents, dead or persecuted at the hands of Nazis and Soviets.
The thing is, because I've seen this in my own generation, people can't learn things, sadly, always from reading. You have to feel it. You see, experience is the greatest teacher in life. A good friend of mine said that. He said, Joe, the greatest teacher is life itself. It's so true. And it's, again, nothing replaces a good, painful experience. It's where God opens our eyes and we've just become comfortable. I actually think that's going to be the great reset in this country. People, it could be 50 years. It could be 100 years.
It could be 1 year.
Whatever it is.
You know what I'm trying to say? Like some people, let's say if you take it on the level of individuals, okay? Some people it takes, while God's working on them, and God is, you know, very, very patient with us as long as we're moving towards him. Some people, it happens very, very quickly. And it could be the same with nations. We don't have to do, we've said this before on the Crusade Channel, always on air and always online at crusadechannel.com, the last live radio station standing. We've said this before. Just because the left had a long, slow march through the institutions doesn't mean that we have to. We could reverse them in no time if we do some of the things I would venture to say, all of the things that you usually prescribe on the show, which is, hey, start with asking God back into the culture through prayer. Okay, get our moral house back in order. You know what? We could repel them very, very quickly. It wouldn't take a long time because you know what? I don't know why? Because we wouldn't be doing it clandestinely like they did. We would be right in their face saying what we say on the show all the time. Gay marriage. The answer is no. Forcing doctors to perform this cosmetic surgery. The answer is no. Abortion. The answer is no. And keep pushing and pushing and pushing and grind them into dust. Figuratively, not literally. You know what I'm trying to say. It doesn't have to be a long time. It could be. You might be right about that. Could be 50 years. Could be 100 years. It could be 50 days if we would just start doing it. If we would start saying, we don't want this anymore. We don't want the destruction of our society. We don't want the destruction of our culture. The answer is no. We're going in a different direction. That's, I think, what needs to happen.
Also, I think it's radical Catholicism, and that's what Tyler O'Neill is talking about. You know, we have to show ourselves to be Catholic. No one, you don't have to announce that you're Catholic if you're really Catholic. I got news for you. People know it. They'll see it by your family. They'll see it the way you deal in business. They'll see how you treat people. They'll even see how you treat your enemies. Mm-hmm. You see, this is how you change the society. We have to become the light on the hill. We only do that again through the sacraments and prayer, because God is the source of all grace. It starts with us. It starts with you. It starts with me. You see, this is how we change the society. People will see their own lives, how dark they've become. And then they'll look across the street in your neighborhood and say, wow, look at the church family. Goodness gracious, they're happy people. Look at how him and his wife get along. Look at how their kids love them and they come home every Sunday for dinner. Look at Justin. Look at him and his wife. They're wonderful people. They always help people. They're kind. They're generous. You see, this is how it works. It starts with you.
I always allude to the bridge on the River Kwai, because I always think I think it's a good example is that the character, it's Sir Alec Guinness's character, if anybody remembers the movie, he's so focused on that bridge that he's blinded to everything else, blinded to it, okay, because he's so focused on that bridge. And then at the end, before his death, he has that great line, Alec Guinness, one of the greatest actors of all time. And he looks up and he realizes now what's going on. His eyes are opened and he's not focusing on the bridge anymore. And he says, my God, what have I done? And then he falls on the detonator and it blows up the bridge and he falls down dead. My point is, that's the moment we need in this country, where we look around at the landscape and what we've done, both either through omission or commission, and say, my God, what have I done or what have I not done that allowed this to happen? And until we have that moment where we realize that, like, this whole thing is just disgusting and evil, our entire culture, and it needs to change, and we have that moment where we say, my God, what have I done? We're not going to change. We need that moment, because that'll be the catalyst, Joe Racinello, where people will say, okay, what do we need to do to right this ship? And then all the things that you prescribe for that, first and foremost, of course, being God and prayer and asking him for divine assistance, then we can get back, then we could go back to where, or start the journey back to where America should be. But you're at the front line with Joe and Joe. Joe Pasillo, Joe Racinello, and we're already way in the breach on the Crusade Channel, always on air, always online at crusadechannel.com, the last live radio station standing. Stick around. We'll be back in a few minutes. Now, let me ask you this. While we're on the Crusade Channel, always on air, always online at crusadechannel.com, the last live radio station standing, and get in the chat room, okay, because it is, it's awake right now and buzzing at crusadechannel.com/chat. I'm just going to hand it over to you, Joe. I want to ask you a question. Is environmentalism a religion?
Well, Weigel says that it's turning into be that, you know, that religion. What is it? Gaia?
Gaia. I mean, this is the Roman earth goddess Gaia. In other words, I watched the HBO series Rome. I'm a Roman history fanatic, so I watch it. A little bit too much language and a little bit too much sex, okay? But I haven't watched it in a long time. And they're praying to Gaia. They're praying to the Earth Mother. And I'm saying to myself, this is 2,000 years later. In other words, and America now is praying to Gaia. Well, that's exactly what, or at least that's what Weigel says they're doing.
Well, Weigel wrote something in First Things. He basically, the name of the article is Gaia, False Gods, and Public Policy. So this is what he says before he kind of like opines on it in the article itself. He says, When the chief scientist of the Obama administration's energy department, who also is a professor of physics at Caltech, challenges the spin and the hysteria surrounding climate change, attention should be paid. That's precisely what Stephen Kuhn does in a recently published piece entitled Unsettled, Climate Science Tells Us, What It Doesn't, and Why It Matters. This is what Professor Kuhn had to say, and we're quoting him here.
Kuhnin.
Heat waves in the U.S. are now no more common than they were in 1900.
That's enough to get him crucified. Go ahead.
The warmest temperature in the U.S. have not risen in the past 50 years. Humans have not had no detectable impact on hurricanes over the past century, and Greenland's ice sheet isn't shrinking any more rapidly today than it is 80 years ago. Now, again, this is a guy that was in Obama's administration. He's also a professor of physics at Caltech. Where is the coverage on that?
It's nowhere.
It's nowhere. You know, and here's what Weigel has to say, and I think he's spot on. I have some comments on it, you know, too, because I think that he's touching on the fact that there is a deep need for God in all people. And basically what people are doing is they're filling that gap with the earth. They're creating a pseudo religion. This is what Weigel says, to be precise. He says, I also have an idea of why climate debate has become so emotionally fraught. It's not because of the media spin or political opportunism. Although both of those play a part, it's because environmentalism has become an ultra-mundane pseudo-religion. The religion has a deity, Gaia the Earth. It has its religious holiday, Earth Day, and it inculcates a moral code. But again, I think people have to fill that gap. You see, you ever see, like, on TV, or we see it sometimes in New York, and I'm sure you have it in New Orleans down there by you guys at the Crusade, you know, rich women, you know, their husbands make tons of money, and they're part of some, like, guild, or like, we sit on the museum society, and we're concerned about the dinosaur museum, because they have to fill a void that should be filled with God. Well, it's the same thing what's going on in our society. Mm-hmm. People are filling this void that should be filled with God. Obviously, you're not going to do it with Earth Day, but they jump on this activism bandwagon. Obviously, they're never going to be satisfied by doing it, but you see it in Hollywood. You see it all over society, and frankly, you see it with a lot of kids in college. It's their religion.
And one of the sources of this religion are the atheists, funny enough, who rail against religion. And why do I say that? You have people, scientists, okay, who with a straight face will make the statement, well, the universe created itself out of pure chance, out of nothing, which is any five-year-old just thinks about that statement for a second, could totally tear it apart. You got people like Deepak Chopra, okay, this new age kind of guy, says, no, the universe is God. In other words, the universe created itself. The universe is God. All ridiculous. Philosophically and logically, they're ridiculous statements. Like I said, even a couple of working guys like us, we could destroy those arguments without even hearing from anybody else out there who have already destroyed those arguments. But when you say this, when you're all over TV, when you're all over YouTube, when you have the four horsemen of the apocalypse, Hitchens and the rest of them up there a few years ago, telling you that the universe created itself or that the universe is God, what do you think is the natural consequence? Well, the kids, the youth, they ditch traditional religion, which is the Catholic religion, okay, the Orthodox religion, the fullness of the truth, and then they set up, like Weigel said, an ultra-mundane pseudo-religion, replete with God, their own God, and sacraments, and indulgences, and all these things. And if you ask them, they'd say, I believe in God, I believe the universe is God. I believe in God, I believe the earth is God. Okay, I've heard some people say, well, I believe the universe created itself, and I am my own God. I am my own cathedral. Do you understand how lost a soul is who makes such ridiculous statements? But my point is, on college campuses, Joe, this is what not only they think, this is what they're taught.
Well, here's the thing. Why do people rebel against God, and why do they turn into those type of, like, individuals? Because they won't bend their knee. You see, God puts boundaries around us, whether we like it or not. At least, you know, the God of Isaac and Jacob and Abraham.
Right.
There are guidelines. They're called the Ten Commandments. You see, society will not adhere to that. So they have to create something. I'll tell you a funny story. I'll never forget it. I'm in India, and a lot of people who go to India, there are gurus to this day.
Mm-hmm.
That is something. So I'm in.
Didn't the Beatles hang out with a couple of those guys, like the Maharishi?
Well, there was a dude. I think his name was called like Saba, S-A-B-A. He had about 1 million followers globally. So I'm in like this little lunch place with this one Italian volunteer. He was from Salerno. This is a guy, Antonio. So he spoke, you know, English well. We're eating lunch. And this dude, he was like an American guy, and he shows me this card. It was like a prayer card, like a saint card.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, it was like an Indian guy that looked like Jimi Hendrix, my hand up. He had like a crazy afro, and he was dead serious. I was like, as he showed me this, I'm like, is this freaking guy out of his mind?
Yes.
I'm like, this dude is coming here to go to some ashram,
right?
You know, like. Here you have Mother Teresa's like tomb. You're in Calcutta,
right?
And you're talking about some.
And you want to pray to Jimi Hendrix?
To the Indian Jimi Hendrix? I'm like, I can't even believe this dude is serious, but he absolutely is, because it's a gap and a need inside of every human being, and if you won't adhere to the authority of God, you will make one up.
But you see, I'm glad you brought up. You know, the God of Abraham,
the Indian
Isaac.
Jimi Hendrix.
The Indian Jimi Hendrix. I'm not going to forget that one for a long time. The Indian on a prayer card of all things.
Kid you not?
You know, they hand you prayer cards at like wakes and funerals, and they say with the Blessed Mother on there. At least she was real. At least she's a real person. But we do have to remember, this is why one of the things that, you know, I need to get back to. I've read the New Testament a number of times. I haven't read the Old Testament as I should, okay? But one of the things that sticks out from the Old Testament, because this is not, and one thing I would emphasize to a lot of people, none of this is a modern phenomenon. This is going on from the beginning, from the creation, okay? What did the Jews do? Ultimately, why did they create the golden calf? Because they didn't like what God was doing. They didn't like the fact that he was taking too long. They didn't like the fact that he was keeping Moses on the mountain. Where is Moses? Why is God doing this? Blah, blah, blah. Let's create a new God. It's the same impulse. It's the same thing. I don't like what God is doing. Why? Because I'm transgender. Well, God didn't make you that way. Well, then I don't like that God. I'm going to go with Gaia. And I'm going to feel good about myself when I go to confession. How do I go to confession? I put plastic bottles in the recycle bin. Okay. And how do I know that I'm gonna be saved at the end? Well, I have carbon trade-offs. So that's my indulgence. I get an indulgence because I pay for a carbon trade-off. Weigel mentions that too. He says, by the way, see how good indulgences went over in the 16th century. See what that led to. My point is, it is absolutely a religion. It's just that, as he said, ultra-mundane pseudo-religion, because people, and again, this is why I mentioned scripture, because nobody who's in this position wants to do what ultimately is needed. If you want to believe in the real God, you have to bend your knee, and they're not willing to do it.
It's the truth.
It's the God on my terms. And Christians are guilty of this too.
Catholics are guilty of it.
We mention that warlock all the time. And yes, we will get in on your liberal Catholics and people like that. I don't like that God that the Catholic Church taught before Vatican II. I want the new God. In the meantime, there is no new or old God, okay? It's a complete misrepresentation of Vatican II. They've never even read the documents. I mean, I'm sorry. I know that sounds judgmental. They probably never even read the documents. They don't even know what Nostra Aetate says or any of the other documents from Vatican II. But that's the line they use. I don't like that church that existed before Vatican II. I like the new church. I got news for you. It's the same church. You might think it's different, okay? But the thing is, and what does it all come down to? I want the religion to accommodate my life. I want Christ to conform to what I want. Last time I checked, I don't care what brand of Christianity you're in. That's not how it goes. It's not how it goes. You conform yourself to Christ. That's what Paul said. Paul said you become the new man. Well, that means you got to bend your knee. And that's not what they're not willing to do. But they found a God whose knee they can bend to, which is Gaia.
It's funny you mentioned that, too, because, you know, speaking of Catholics, you know, I was thinking of this when I was reading the scripture. I read it, the Magnificat. It's a good guide if you want to read the scripture every day. It's a great periodical. And recently in the readings, they talked about the circumcision, how basically, in the beginning of the church, the Pharisees would not accept. The Pharisees who accepted Christ said that the, you know, you're talking about like the Greeks, like Cornelius, not Greeks, the Romans, Cornelius, Lydia, they had, you know, you had to be circumcised, like the men, obviously. So, and nowadays, women can get circumcised too in this woke culture, but that's another story.
That's another story. Are they going to demand that the Jews start circumcising women?
But in all seriousness, so basically, but the Pharisees wouldn't accept that. You see, but Peter said, no, you don't have to get circumcised. And that was the way it went, because he was in charge. You see, things do sometimes change, and that was a big change, and you had to accept it. You see, that happens on the right side of the Catholic Church, too. Don't think it doesn't. You see, that was legit, and that was shocking to the Pharisees, but they had to accept it. Know why? Because Peter said so. You see, it's not your church. It's God's church, and you do things the way God says so, the way the church says so. You see, it comes down to that, and we don't make it up. You know, it's the same thing with environmentalism. In a sense, you're making up a religion. It's right. Not your religion. It's Christ's church. I'm a part of it, and I listen. And if I don't listen, I'm in trouble. Because I die.
And again, too, and that's the one problem with the way a lot of people view the Catholic Church is like it is an all or nothing proposition. You have to believe in what the church teaches.
Everything.
Those things that you are bound to believe as delineated by the church, you have to believe, from the Immaculate Conception to the Trinity to whatever doctrine there is. But there's so much room for prudential judgment that the church allows for. There is prudential judgment. That's why I never liked this idea that there's only one way. Well, if I turn around and say there's four persons in the Blessed Trinity, okay, which obviously wouldn't be a Trinity anymore, I got a problem. I'm saying something wrong, okay? But if I say in my prudential judgment, I think that I make a comment or I offer an opinion on our economic system, the church is not going to come down on, you know what I mean? This idea.
That's
but there are certain fundamentals that the church says, no, this you must believe. This is a non-negotiable. And then everything else, because again, we have free will, we have reason, we have intelligence, and God gives us that so that we could work our way through life, guided, as you said, objectively by the church. I do, in the interest of wanting to equip our audience, and I would recommend anybody go and read Weigel's article in First Things, just to put a finer point on it. Joe mentioned a couple things that Professor Koonin said. Also remember this, and this is just ammo. I'm just giving people some ammo for all those who tell you you're crazy not to bend your knee to to Gaia and Gaia's prophets. You know who Gaia's prophets are, right? Al Gore. Al Gore's Gaia's prophet. Hero America, I'm Al Gore. I'm a prophet of Gaia. I do carbon trade-offs when I get on my private jet to fly out to Hollywood to go and get drunk with my friends. So, but I'm telling y'all exactly how y'all supposed to live, okay? So they have, Gaia has her prophets, okay? Al Gore, Leonardo DiCaprio comes to mind. They're all Gaia's prophets, okay? But just for some ammunition, tornado frequency and severity are not trending up. Okay, it's the opposite. Nor are the severity of droughts. Global fires have been trending down. The sea level rise is not accelerated. Crop yields are rising, not falling. And you know, Koonin goes on and on. Now, why? Because he thinks that maybe there's not some things we could do to protect the environment. Of course not. We're Catholic. We believe that we're stewards of the environment.
I recycle.
And let me tell you something. If they were reasonable, okay, which I do think there might have been a time where we did pollute too much and we needed reasonable regulation. But again, we're talking about deifying the earth. We're talking about making profits out of people like Al Gore and Leonardo DiCaprio, and sacraments like, you know, like that they have. My point is that he's exposing them for what they are, which is this: you don't question the orthodoxy. If you do, you are anathema. Sounds awfully religious to me, Joe Resinello.
Well, that's why, I mean, getting back to like our own church, that's why we have bishops and that's why we have a pope. I mean, they're the ones that set the tone, you know, and again, there's authority. There is authority. God is the ultimate authority, mm-hmm. and we have to listen to him. And that's isn't that always been the rub, though, with human nature? It's always the rub. I think, you know, it's funny. My old pastor, he passed away, but he was talking about, like, basically the conservatives and the liberals. And he said, like, you've noticed, you know, okay, there's a change in the president, obviously. We're not burning things down, conservatives.
No.
Look at what happened for 4 years when Trump was the president. There was just absolute and utter craziness going on, even violence. And what my old pastor said is conservatives get in line faster. Not saying that you're basically bending your knee to these people, but at the same time, we don't lash out. We're not like, because I think conservatives, and they're not perfect either, because I'm not perfect and I'm a social conservative, it's authority. There's something about authority that liberals cannot grasp. They don't respect man or God. They have no respect for authority. Now, conservatives aren't perfect either. We're all sinners, because if we weren't, you know, if we were perfect, we wouldn't sin. But it's the authority piece. They can't accept it.
But one thing that bothers me about these, let's stick with environmentalists, right? Especially the younger types. They love, like, without probably ever having seen the movie, they all want to be rebels without a cause. They all want to be James Dean, and I'm a badass, and, you know, I'm rebelling against my parents, but I really don't have a cause. It's just, you know, just to do so. For the same reason you're saying, ultimately it comes down to authority. But they're so stupid. I'm sorry to be uncharitable. They are so stupid when they don't realize, but you're still accepting authority. You call it the scientific community. And that's obviously a false statement because they're not unified on this. They'll present it as though the scientific community is unified on environmentalism, but they're not. Stephen Koonin is an example of that. But these kids are so dumb, they don't realize, but you're just giving off one authority, the real authority, which is God. You're throwing off God's authority, and you're just substituting it for another authority. But nonetheless, I'd hate to tell you, you're not James Dean, and you're not a rebel without a cause. You're still living under an authority, okay? Try to go against them. Try to question environmentalism, okay? See what happens to you. But it shows that, no, you are still, like, I want to tell them, get your head out of your butt with this authority thing, okay? You're not free. You're not radically free. You don't live your life like you have no authority. You have bent your knee. It's just to a different authority. You should wake up and recognize that you have done so, and then you should wake up and recognize that what you've bent your knee to is an idol. It is a false god. And you need to get back and worship the correct God, the one true God. But they're so dumb because I hate when they throw that around, Joe Resinello. Oh, I'm not under authority. Yes, you are. And that includes atheists, too.
But, you know, in a Bible study, someone said this once, and it always stuck with me. You know how, like, Christ says, my yoke is easy and my burden is light?
Right.
He equated it to, like a horse. So, like, if you put a yoke on a horse, if it's wood, it doesn't cut into the shoulders of the horse, but a metal yoke cuts into the shoulders. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing. The yoke of Christ doesn't cut into the skin, but the metal yoke of sin cuts the back.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing. You're going to serve somebody. Our good friend Bob Dylan said that.
That's right.
To echo what Joe said. You can't leave your burden at the door. You're picking up one or the other. It's that of sin or it's that of Christ. It's one of the two. You don't have it both ways. By the time you're 30 years old, you should figure that out in life. Life, you can't have your cake and eat it too. That's the way life is. You choose one or the other, but the yoke of sin is heavier. It's simply heavier. And following these false idols like Gaia or anything else for that matter always cuts the skin and it causes unrest in us. We're not happy. And the fruit of that is bad fruit. And again, it gets back to what will change America. It's people seeing the good fruit locally, in your neighborhood, in your family.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, over time, and when you do this consistently, the Holy Spirit will work on them.
Absolutely.
And then that will create change.
And another thing, too, just so we're coming up on a break probably in about 30 seconds or so. But I like the way Weigel ends it, because we're constantly being told, Joe Russinolo, we want a secular world. OK, the secular humanists are out there, and they're as loud now as the atheists were 15 years ago with the Four Horsemen and everything else. Weigel says, is ours a secular world? I think this is really kind of like the gut punch in the article. Is ours a secular world, or is it a world that's traded authentic religion for a modern form of idolatry? I'm with him on that. We don't live in a secular world. And as we just showed, and as he showed in his article, where did he write that, Joe? First Things, he showed. No, it's religion, all right, just a different kind. And it ain't the kind you're actually supposed to follow. And that's true. That's the truth. So you're at the front line with Joe and Joe. We're going to take a little break. We're way in the breach on the Crusade Channel, always on air, always online at crusadechannel.com, the last live radio station standing. Our call and telephone number, if you want to give us a call in the next hour, is 844-527-8723. And the chat room's open. The only social media out there worth actually socializing in is online at crusadechannel.com/chat. We'll talk to you on the other side of the break. Sinello, way in the breach on the Crusade Channel. Always on air, always online at crusadechannel.com. The last live radio station standing. The chat room's open. The only social media out there worth actually socializing in is online at crusadechannel.com/chat. So the bishops seem to be making some noise. Now, I know a lot of people say, it's late. They should have said something sooner. And there's some validity to that. But I'll tell you what, right now, Joe, the way things are, I'll take what I can get. But I will say this. Some of them in particular, and Joe's going to start off the conversation, are being more vocal than others. But nonetheless, they're starting to be more public in their questioning about whether or not Joe Biden should receive Holy Communion, which we know the answer to that is no. But, you know, the rest of the people need to hear that. So I'm going to hand it over to you.
I mean, we've been talking about this for years since we started the show. I think the first show that we ever did on the Crusade Channel, we covered that South Carolina priest. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
I mean, we've been talking about this for years. I mean, this particular article was written by Thomas Williams. And basically what he says is the U.S. Bishops Conference is currently drafting a document to clarify the issues of reception of Holy Communion, especially regarding public figures who promote abortion on demand. Now, the Kansas City Archbishop Joseph Neumann, he's the chairman of the Bishop's Committee on Pro-Life Activities.
Remember, he's
been very vocal.
He's the one who basically excommunicated Kathleen Sebelius, if I remember correctly. That might be a strong word. Either way, he came down on her. He basically said she can't receive Holy Communion.
Well, basically, he told the AP that the matter will be discussed at the Bishops' Conference in June, and the bishops will vote on whether the committee should continue working on the document for public release. Now, let me just stop there. Obviously, this should have been done a long time ago. Why is it being talked about, you know, a lot now? You have Corleone in California. You have a lot of talk. Basically, because Biden is saying he's a devout Catholic. It's one of the talking points. It's like, what's the difference between, say, Pelosi and Biden right now? They're both baptized Catholics. But Biden is selling himself to America. It's one of the, you know, Psaki's talk. Well, Joe Biden's a devout Catholic. I carry my rosary. You know, while it should be done equally to Pelosi, she's not basically waving that flag.
I think there is a distinction to be made. You're correct. Pelosi touts herself as a faithful Catholic. Biden does too, but now, but the press has picked up on that as a weapon to use against against people like us to say, no, 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 he's a devout Catholic. Pelosi usually just says that about herself. So does Biden, but Biden has the press behind them on this. My point is they're peddling a narrative when it comes to Biden.
Well, we covered this a while ago. I mean, he does basically represent, sadly, American Catholics because it's sad.
That was one of the sadder conversations that we had because that he is the face of American Catholicism.
Yeah,
on us.
Exactly. Sad, but true. I mean, only 18% of Catholics go to church. Only 18%.
Or believe in the real presence.
Well, 30% believe in the true presence.
Right.
18% go to church. That's horrible. That's all the bishops should be talking about, but that's a conversation for another day. But here's the thing. Say they do come out with this document in June. Say they do this. I'll be honest with you. It's not going to be upheld in Washington, D.C. by Gregory. Let's be honest. So what is it? It's, you know, it's sickening, actually. And, you know, I've come full circle on this. I used to go berserk. I've come completely full circle. What can I do is what I ask myself now. Me. What can I do? And I'll tell you what I can do. I don't give them any money. I used to give them a good bit of my tithe every single year to Peter's Pence. Every single year for probably a decade. I don't give them any more money. And I've written them very respectfully, but I've written them and I basically say, in good conscience, I can't give you any money.
Were you being respectful when you sent your bishop's appeal back and you wrote across the thing, vegano?
That's where I said, I've come full circle. I've gone nuts. I used to go nuts. And as Joe said, I did that probably like 3 years ago. I've come completely.
That was funny. I said to Joe, I said, did you get the bishop's annual appeal? He goes, dude, I got it. I wrote across it. Vegano. I put it back in the envelope and I sent it to the Archdiocese of Newark.
So basically, but now
I think that's great,
no,
by the way.
It is, but you know, but what I've come to the realization, it doesn't do anything. And I really, Joe, honestly, I've thought about this long and hard, and I've actually been like, I do speak to a contemplative nun periodically, and she gave me some good advice too. It tears down the church in a sense. What I'm here to do is build up the body of Christ. Mm-hmm. Every Catholic should be in the business of building up the body of Christ. What I can do is only what I can do. And this is what I do. I don't give money. Number two, I fast for the church every Wednesday. My wife and I, we don't eat from the morning until dinner, all day, nothing. Maybe I have a glass of tea. I fast for the church. That's number two. Number three, I like what TFP did recently at Seton Hall. I've never done it personally, but I like it. And Father Imperato has made the suggestion. If you have a problem, dress up nicely, go in front of where the bishop lives, and pray the rosary in protest.
That's what TFP did after they left Seton Hall and protested WSOU with their you know, broadcasting satanic music. And it is satanic music. It's not like sitting here saying, do you know if you play Stairway to Heaven backwards, the devil's talking to you. We're not talking about that. We're talking about blatantly satanic music and lyrics, death metal, all that stuff. But right afterwards, John Ritchie and those guys, okay, a lot of whom are young kids, like you said, dressed very well, very respectful. They went down South Orange Avenue to Clifton Avenue in Newark, made a left, went to the cathedral right across the street, is Cardinal Tobin's office, and that's where they went, and they prayed there. God bless them.
What else can you do? Double down on your prayer life and yearn and seek out personal holiness. Holiness changes the church. Look at our examples. Who are our examples? The saints. Teresa of Avila did that with the Carmelites. She stopped wearing shoes. There was basically, the Carmelites became basically corrupt. They had the disclad and the, like, she didn't wear shoes. I mean, like, she lived an austere life. What happened? She reformed the order. Francis did the same thing. These are things you can do. I'm not talking about not wearing shoes. What I'm talking about is up your prayer game.
Right.
Yearn for personal holiness. These are things you can do.
But this is what
I want to also focus on. Bitching about it does nothing. Now, what it does, it itches your own anger. You see, men don't bitch. Men do something. And fasting and trying to be holy is a manly practice.
That's why I think those guys up at Seton Hall, when I was there, why I was so impressed. I think, and I didn't think of it this way, but now that you said it like that, those guys weren't there to bitch. Those guys,
no!
Those guys were there like the men at Lepanto. They know where the enemy is, okay? They're there and they prayed, and they're going to continue to fight. Obviously, they're not picking up swords and cutting off the DJ's heads at WSOU.
But that's not how you do things.
But that's what they did. They're not bitching about anything. They're there, they pray, they act. And by the way, those guys, just so the Crusade Channel audience knows, those guys are very brave guys, very courageous guys.
Oh, absolutely.
They go all of the... Joe, I watched some of their videos online at where they're protesting abortion or gay marriage or all that nonsense on university campuses. Okay, these guys are spit at. They're mocked. You talk about a really strong witness to the faith. Those guys are it. They're the real deal.
Mike, I can remember Mike putting in Twitter, basically in Poland, TFP, some ladies, like, they're barking at them. Like, crazy people, dude. They were like Satanists, like, literally barking in their face. It's insanity.
You do realize, though, that I am completely on board with Catholic teaching on demons and demonology, okay? I've watched videos like that. I saw one from a few years ago where these Catholic men were praying the rosary in front of a church to protect the church because the radical feminists wanted to go into the church. And these men just literally lined up in front of the church and would not budge. And they didn't hurt anybody or do anything. They didn't even address these women. They were praying the rosary, okay? And if I tell you, if that's not demonic activity, what I watched on that video, where these women start tearing off their clothes. Remember, the demoniacs, a lot of them were naked. Remember, in the New Testament, they didn't wear clothes. They were ravenous. They were spewing all sorts of filthy words out of their mouth. These women were doing the same thing. No, it's the same. So my point in bringing the story is, don't think a lot of that isn't actually demonic influence on these people. You don't act that way. Like, you don't, let's say, go up to somebody and start spitting in their face because they're simply praying, or rip off your shirt or throw, I won't mention it on the Crusade Channel, but throw things you shouldn't throw at other people on them, you know, particularly like bodily fluids. I mean, it's very demonic.
Well, let me just first say this. I was one of those people that just would flip out and basically constantly attack the church when it did the wrong thing. I was, for many years, I was constantly flipping out. What's up with the bishops? What's up with the bishops? What's up? And frankly, is it valid? Of course. Do I have eyes? Of course. But it's not the way to correct it. In my view, again, I've come full circle on it. What can I do? Joe Resinello, me. I'm here to build up. I'm not here to tear down.
Right.
It's easy to criticize something. It's like shooting fish in a barrel. Anyone can do it. The problems have always been in the church from the very beginning, and there always will be problems as long as we're on this side of heaven. But what can you do to build it up? And holiness, if you really want to do something, become holy. Make the sacrifices. Make the sacrifices. Love hurts. For love to be real, it has to hurt. It costs. And that's what I'm talking about. You want to make a change. You know, St. Francis, during his time, a lot of bishops and priests had wives. They had wives. They had families. And what Francis would do when he would see this, he would kiss the hand of the priests. And they were known public sinners because he said, you're the hand, because Francis wasn't a priest. He said, you're the hands that bring us Christ. You know something? They changed. Why did they change? Because Francis was that holy. Francis was that holy, they would change. But this is the answer. You know, you could listen, when you have a son and he's 16 and he's doing the wrong thing and you're the dad and you're like, stop drinking with your friends. I can't tell you how many times my parents said that to me. One time, I never told you this story, Joe Pasillo. I came home drunk for the like millionth time when I was in high school. My father made me sleep on the floor of my living room. He was like, you don't deserve a bed. Sleep on the floor. And I did. And I didn't care. And what I did the next weekend, I went out and drank again. I didn't care. What changes people is example. Francis, that's what changed me, to be honest with you. That's about all I could say.
I will say this. One of the things, you're jarring my memory a little bit, because I learned, obviously, I didn't learn enough about the faith, growing up a Catholic. But I will say this. I learned a lot coming back to the faith. One of the things I learned, and that's why when you go off on personal holiness, I let you go, because I do, and I learned that that's the answer. A good priest told me one time, again, I was ignorant of a lot of things. I didn't know. And I said that, I think I said something to the priest along the line of, well, these are my personal sins. And, when I commit sins, I do go to confession. He says, you don't understand. He says, or maybe you're not aware of this. When you sin, you are tearing down the life of the church. And when you avoid sin and you strive for holiness and you grow in holiness, you are building up the life of the church. I never heard that before. I always thought it was just my problem. Like, sin is my problem. I go to Christ, I confess, and this is years ago. I go to Christ, I confess my sins, okay? But that priest enlightened me. No. When I sin, if I fall, I'm hurting the church. I am. So when you say, in other words, pray for the bishops, pray for Gomez, pray for Coeur de Lion, pray for them all, okay? One of the ways that we could do to help them is avoid sin as best you can. No, it's really be, like I said earlier in the conversation, be sober, be vigilant, don't fall into temptation. Jesse Romero, I remember him say one time, he goes, dude, if you get a lustful thought in your head, you immediately have to say a Hail Mary. In other words, and ask her to get rid of it. You know what I mean? Or Saint Benedict, please pray for me to cast out demons and those thoughts. It never struck me before this good priest told me that, no, when you sin, it does have an effect on other people because it affects the church. And when you're doing the right thing in God's eyes, you're building up the life of the church. That's why when you mention things about fasting, that's right. If you want Gomez to do a good job, if you want Coeur de Lion to do a good job, if you want them to come together and speak as one, which they should be speaking as one, do something. Do something. Now, I will say, I wanted to mention, there is one thing in this article that I did not like, okay? I don't want a commission to study a document that's going to make a recommendation 5 years from now, if you know what I mean.
Oh, okay. This is all bull crap anyway. It should have been done. So, I mean, they're an impotent group, sadly.
And that's why we need to pray for them. But this is the one line that you tell the Crusade Channel audience about, which was, the matter will be discussed at the USCCB's meeting in June, and the bishops will vote on whether the committee should continue working on the document for eventual public release. Boys, Joe Biden's about to die. You want to speak very plainly to the bishops, okay? The man's about to die. You need to take action for his soul, not for mine, not for Joe's, not for the king, dude, not for the crusader. For his soul. What do you mean you got a committee that's going to study whether or not you should continue moving forward so you can write a document? That's where their bureaucracy bothers me.
Oh, it is bureaucracy. All right, and that's where it bothers me. I mean, we talked about this before the show, Joe and I. How is it that you could have basically such, like, the opinions are so different in the Catholic Church? How is it possible? Do you know, I work in an organization, and there is no difference of opinion. And we don't make a vow. Like, how is it possible? It's sad. But again, I believe this to my core. The answer is holiness. We have to change the church personally. First, we have to change ourselves. And saints have done that.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's why we have saints. Saints change the world. We have to become them.
I will say this. You mentioned corporate America. What happens in corporate America, Joe? Okay, what happens? You don't do your job. What happens to you? You're defiant against the boss. Boss says, hey, Joe, I need those. Now, what is it? Those TPS reports. Remember the movie Office Space? Yeah, I need those TPS reports.
Sure.
Okay, and if you tell him no, you know what he does? Joe, if I don't have them by the end of the day, you're gone. All right? To a degree, I'm not all to start telling people they're going to hell. But remind, like a guy like Joe Biden, and the reason why, Joe, a statement needs to come out from the USCCB in regards to him, he needs to be reminded there is a hell, and people go there, and he doesn't want to be there. That should be a reminder for all of us. Ultimately, Christ came to save us from hell, so because he doesn't want us in hell. There is something to be said for them to come out bluntly and tell Joe Biden, Joe, listen, your soul is in danger. It really is in danger.
Padre Pio used to do it.
Right.
Padre Pio wouldn't give you basically
absolution.
Yes. When you went to confession. In fact, I actually know a guy from New York, Mario Bresci. His dad.
Nice Irish guy, huh?
Yes. His dad went to confession with Padre Pio and was not given. He didn't yell at him because
right.
Padre Pio would periodically do that.
Yeah.
Wouldn't give him absolution.
Yeah, well, maybe we should get back to that a little bit for the salvation of souls. You're at the front line with Joe and Joe. Joe Pasillo, Joe Resinello on the Crusade Channel. Always on air, always online. CrusadeChannel.com. The last live radio station standing. Stick around. We got more great conversation for you. We'll talk to you on the other side of the break. With Joe and Joe, Joe Pasillo, Joe Resinello, Way in the Breach on the Crusade Channel, always on air and always online at crusadechannel.com, the last live radio station standing. Remember, at the top of the hour, we're going to have Dan Leroy. We're going to be talking about Catholic revolutionaries in America. A lot of people don't know about those, Joe Resinello, so it's good that Dan wrote the book and he's going to come on and he's going to talk to us for a little bit about that. And we're going to keep the conversation going. The chat room needs more buzzers in there, so crusadechannel.com/chat. Get in there. It's the only social media out there worth actually socializing in. With that, I'm going to hand it over to Joe Resinello.
And Barrett, that is fantastic. John Wayne, that headgear, man, is fantastic. He looks like it's a live raccoon on his head.
So you're missing the picture of John Wayne posted by Rick Barrett in the chat room. You got to get in there. CrusadeChannel.com/chat.
Well, this one's an interesting one. We got this one from Breitbart. Police in London arrested a Christian street preacher for allegedly causing alarm and distress to pedestrians for citing allegedly homophobic verses from Genesis. This is Pastor John Sherwood, and he was preaching alongside Pastor Peter Simpson. They're of the Penn Free Methodist Church. Basically, this is what Sherwood preached. He was preaching on Genesis 1, saying, God's design in creating mankind was to set human beings in families headed by a father and a mother, not by two fathers and two mothers.
That's offensive!
The distinction within mankind of just two genders, male and female, made in the image of God, constitutes the essence of God's created order.
What's wrong with that statement? I don't understand. It's so obvious. You don't even have to be religious to recognize that to be true. Go ahead, Joe.
Simpson said that the police informed them that three complaints were made in response to the street sermon. He said that the police...
Yeah, three queens walking down the street saying, that's offensive!
No, but even... He said that police officers warned them that he had to stop making homophobic statements. I don't even think that's a homophobic statement, but that's another story, and that there is no freedom to make statements which offend people, and ultimately he was arrested and handcuffed. This is, I'm going to tell you this, this is where they're going to get us, if you ask me. It is going to be on the gay marriage deal. You, like, we were just chatting at the break about, like, because I was just looking at the news, and Chappelle basically made some comments about Saturday Night Live saying that no one's woke enough. So he was basically outspoken about Saturday Night Live. And it is true. I think it's gone too far. The left always overplays their hand, and they've overplayed their hand on that, clearly. And I don't think regular people are going to buy it. However, you are not going to be able to say, and I think this is where the church, as in the Catholic Church, and frankly, so same with the Protestant churches in America, it's not going to work. Well, what I mean by work is they're going to come for us. It's going to be on the same-sex marriage. This is going to be accepted across the country, not just by Democrats. Very soon, in my view, the Republicans will be on board with this as well.
When Bruce Jenner is on the presidential ticket, okay, as the vice president, you know exactly what the Republicans are going to be about. And let's face it, they're not strong. Republicans and conservatives are not strong on this issue. They are so afraid to stand up to this so-called LGBT juggernaut, this rainbow rage mob. They're so spineless. to turn around what to do, what this preacher did, to say, look, families are made up of a mother and a father and kids. Anything outside of that is a distortion, a perversion of what a family is. Therefore, we hold with traditional teaching, traditional church teaching, and this goes back to the beginning, so include the Jews in this too. This is Old Testament. This is an abomination. You don't need to know religion to know that sodomy is a blatant, as E. Michael Jones says very, very emphatically all the time, sodomy does violence to the natural law. He doesn't just say it violates the natural law. It does violence to the natural law. Okay, and we are going to be afraid to say that when it's just so obvious.
Well, it's not even going to be you're going to be afraid. You're not going to be allowed to say it. And the church is going to be basically persecuted because of it. And soon, I think very soon, there'll be hate crimes levied on the church. You're already starting to see that in Canada. Mm-hmm. And that is what's going to happen.
Well, look,
in America.
Mean, right, because obviously we're talking about this story that comes from London, but look at the real problem in this, or the real problem statement in this article, Joe. The cop said, "You have no freedom to make statements which offend people." Let's break that down for a second, okay? If they applied the same standard to themselves, okay, they'd have to shut their mouth because everything that comes out of their mouth is offensive to somebody. It's offensive to me.
Right,
exactly. That's my point. Well, how are you going to set the standard? Because when Joy Reid opens her mouth, or Ibram Kendi opens his mouth, or appropriately named Dick Goodstein opens his mouth on Fox News, or Fowler, or any one of them, okay, I'm offended. I'm offended by what they say. I'm offended by what they say about us as conservatives. I'm offended by what they say of us about us as Catholics. I'm offended. Are you going to apply the same standard to yourself? If what you're saying is you have no right to offend somebody, well, guess what? Then you have to shut the F up too, because all it takes under that standard, Joe, is someone somewhere in some place to say, I'm offended by what you said. And what they're saying is it's okay for the government to take away your right to say it. Look, I'm not the biggest fan of Jordan Peterson, and we've talked about him on the Crusade Channel before, but he makes one very good overarching point. You don't have a right not to be offended. You don't. You have a right to come back at my position, to debate me, to argue with me. You have a right to do that. But what you don't have a right to do is to say, I'm offended, therefore you can't say what you want. That's BS. And we have to call BS on that and tell them, no. I could say whatever the hell I want. And if you're offended by it, argue with it. But you can't get the government to shut me down. In the case of this story, this preacher was shut down by the cop. And the cop even said, you don't have the right, you have no freedom to make statements that offend people. Well, my thing is this. If that's the society we live in, well, then you have to shut your mouth, too. Because what you say is offensive to me.
What's the town in South Jersey? It's like sort of a Methodist town. It's like on Sunday, you can't drive on the street. It's like, I can't believe I can't think of the name of it.
I'm not sure.
Well, anyway, it was an established Methodist town. I actually knew somebody that lived there for a while. And they had sort of like a gazebo in the middle of the town. On Sundays, you couldn't drive. It was a very like nice place to go, to have a house. And mm-hmm. It was very pleasant. Anyway, a gay couple wanted to marry there in the square. And they won. They fought them in court and they won.
Who won?
The gay couple.
Okay.
And they had to get married in this town. It
right.
was sort of like, so, and it made the news in New Jersey. Why I bring this up, it's a matter of time before in one of these states, a couple will go into a Catholic church and demand to be married.
And the government is going to come down on the side of that couple.
And what's eventually going to happen is they're going to take away their tax status.
Is the USCCB going to form a commission to investigate and then create a document? Is that what they're going to do?
This is going to be the downfall of the church in America, but then the church is going to get strong. Because it will be because of the persecution that the true church will come from the ashes. But eventually, that is what's going to happen. It's going to happen in the Protestant circles as well. It is going to become ingrained in American culture that two men and two women can marry.
It's already there.
I mean, I'll be honest with you. And in my own town, right across the street from my house, there are two women next to the state trooper, who is very conservative. We talk all the time. two women. One's a cop. One is she works in a police station. She's sort of the dispatcher. Two women live together with two children across the street from my house. This is middle class America in New Jersey. This is not, listen, I mean, New Jersey is a blue state, but when you go into the suburbs, it's not as blue as you may think. My point is, this is going to completely torpedo the ship. What you're seeing a little taste of, I know Mike put this on Twitter this week, somebody got arrested in Canada, it was all over the news, Ottawa, I believe, it was a Protestant preacher who basically opened up the doors of his church and he was arrested. But this is going to be the cotter pin. All the other woke stuff, the transgender stuff, it's not going to fly. They are overplaying their hand on it. Frankly, regular people are not going to buy into it, if you ask me. It's too over the top. But same-sex marriage, speaking purely objectively, speaking purely as a winner and a loser on the political, like, say, like, advisory side of the house, like, if you're basically going to advise someone, it's a winner. It's a winner, and the Republicans are going to be on board with it very soon, and then the Christian churches are in trouble.
I like what Kaiser reminded us of in the chat room. He was responding to Ann. Hi, Ann. Haven't spoken to you in a while. Ann's in the chat room also. Kaiser said, let's be honest. They're offended that we exist. And that is a true statement. The reason why it struck me is because, remember something, Joe, we talk about the martyrs, we talk about the early Christians, okay? The Roman emperors and the Roman society and the pagan society, they were offended that these people existed. That's why Nero burned them and lined the streets with them to light up the streets of Rome, okay? They're offended at their mere existence. You could remember, they always say the same thing, like that silver-tongued devil Obama. Well, you have the right to worship. You got the freedom to worship. No, I don't. No, I don't. President Obama. No, I don't. I have the right to the free expression of my religion, not the right to worship. That's his slick leftist way of saying, see, they call Bill Clinton Slick Willie. I'm going to call him Slick Barry.
Well, okay? He's not as slick. He's nefarious.
Well, that's the thing. But he says, you have the right to worship. You got the right to worship? Nobody's taking that away. Right. That means go in your house.
Correct.
Okay. That's all that means. No, no. I'll give you a lesson, Mr. Law Professor. I have the right to the free expression of my religion. That means if I want to get in the public square, in Times Square, and I want to preach to people that marriage is between one man and one woman, that a family is a mother, a father, and children, I have the right to do so. Whether it's religiously motivated or not, I have a right to do so. But the reason why I'm bringing this up is eventually, they will come into your home. What they'll do is they'll say, are you teaching? We know you have a right to worship. Are you teaching your children that Catholic faith? Are you teaching your children that marriage can only be between one man and one woman? Yep. That's what I'm teaching my kids. And they'll take your kids. You see, this is the form of persecution.
I'll be honest. I disagree with you there for one reason. Just like boys can't play on girls' teams and why they're overplaying their hand on that, and you're bringing people in the fray that wouldn't have been. If that happened, it's on. You see, it's on. Regular people all of a sudden, like, there's certain things I'm not going to go to jail for. I'm going to jail for that. I'm going to tell you that right now.
You know who said that? You know who also, just to echo what you're saying? I remember Ben Shapiro said that. He says, I'm tolerant to a point.
See, that's what I'm saying. Like,
he says, you come through my house and come for my kids.
No.
He goes, that's what, you know.
It's on. And like, you'll get even indifferent people. You see, that is where, to be truthful with you, you overplayed your hand on that. But the gay marriage piece, that's not going anywhere. And here's the thing. Whether you work at McDonald's or you work at Goldman Sachs, you cannot say, as in right now, that you simply believe in traditional marriage. 10 years ago, you could. You can't now. And if you ask me, that's going nowhere. That's not going away. Because it's just not. You're going to have a remnant of people in certain circles, Jews, Muslims, Christians, that are not for it. But the average American is going to be like, I have no problem with that. You're going to see proms. I'm sure it's going on right now in public schools across America. Same-sex couples, they're 17 years old.
And mommy and daddy are encouraging them.
You're going to see soon people, you know how on social media when kids get married, they put like a picture of their kid getting married. Oh, you're going to see two men getting married very soon. Like parents. Do you know, this was one of the most disturbing things I've ever seen. I was coming home. I was on the subway after work, and it was a couple. It was a couple with their two kids. They had twins, and one of the kids was going to NYU, and the other kid was like visiting their, you know, his brother. It was a family, and the kid was gay who went to the city, the school in the city, and he was telling his parents about like his life. And I'm sitting across from them on the train.
Right.
And I was just like, they looked like they were from Nebraska.
Right.
Like they had like, you know, real blonde hair, blue eyes, that like farm looking. They definitely were not from around here. Let's put it that way. But, and I'm not picking on Nebraska. I'm just saying they had that like country look, like Midwestern look. And what I'm saying is, I was saying to myself, damn, I cannot believe that this kid is telling this to his parents. He's probably like 19, and his parents aren't slapping the crap out of him.
Right.
And this is what is going to not, that's not going anywhere.
And you also have the woke celebrity types, and that they're obviously not helping either because they promote this propaganda. I remember a few years ago watching Kate Winslet in an interview, she says, I think it's wonderful that my child will live in a world where they can be whatever sex they want. She made that statement, okay? Dwayne Wade celebrated him. My wife was telling me, I think he's married to the actress Gabrielle Union. So their boy thinks he's a girl. He came out and basically said, I celebrate this. This is Dwayne Wade. You want to talk about macho, basketball
but
that, player?
That's because the woman.
Right. But just, I said that was because of his wife. In the meantime, I'm gonna divorce her if I'm him, and I'm gonna go. Well, they're not Catholic anyway. But my point is, they celebrate it. What's his name? The other couple that sold their soul to the devil, Will Smith and Jada Pinkett.
Oh, that's
all right.
Sad.
Their kid dresses
that's
like a girl,
sad,
and they let him walk down the street. My father would have slapped the crap out of me.
Right.
Okay. If I wore high waters, my father gave me a backhand.
Dude,
I mean,
that's so sad.
They let the kid wear a dress, and then they put it all over social media. This is what we're dealing with. We're dealing with a demonic Hollywood sports organizations, woke sports organizations. They're all promoting it. So you get this Midwestern milquetoast family listening to their 19-year-old boy tell him about the wonders of living a homosexual lifestyle.
And they're not blinking about it. I mean, but I getting back to, you know, basically.
Can I say this real quick?
Sure.
The problem is parents want to be loved by their kids, which is no problem because all parents want to be loved by their kids. The one thing you better get first from your kids is their respect. And I'll tell you what, I swear growing up, Joe, I say this almost as a confession. There were times in my life growing up, okay, because I was such a hooligan that I didn't feel love for my mother and my father. But I'll tell you, and I love them both to death. You know that, right? But I respected my mother and father. Because if I got out of line, and that was with discipline that they, you know, imposed on me, and I still was a hooligan. I imagine how much worse I would have been if I had parents like the ones you're describing on the subway. In other words, that just let me do whatever I want. So my point is that respect is what you have to look for from your kids first. Love will come with that, but you got your kids got to respect you. And if your kid comes home and says, Daddy, I'm gay, sorry. The kid gets a backhand and says, I'm taking you to the priest because we have a problem. You're not gay.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, ultimately, what they want out of both the Catholic and the Protestant churches in America, if you ask me, is their land. They're going to take away that is the ultimate goal.
Doesn't it remind you of Henry VIII
but
and the English Reformation? They confiscated the land.
They want their property. I could just speak for America. I mean, not America, New York City. The Catholic Church owns more property than anyone in New York City. It's a fact. They want the property, and they're going to get it because they're going to take away. That is how they're going to fight us. You see, fighting isn't done like it, you know, back in the day, 100 years ago. Fighting is done now strategically, one of which the ways they do it is economically. They're going to take their property. Do you know that there was a bill in Connecticut, Joe Pasillo, that threatened Catholic Church with regard to their tax status?
Really?
Absolutely.
I'm not shocked.
It didn't pass, but it was there. That is exactly what is going to happen. And it's going basically what is going to be the spark in it. It's going to be the same-sex marriage issue. You're not going to be able to say that. You can't say that now. I'm going to tell you, I don't care. Like I said, you could work at McDonald's. If you say, well, listen, marriage is between a man and a woman. You're making French fries. You're out.
You're out.
You can't say that.
And you could
anywhere.
Be black or Hispanic.
Doesn't matter.
13-year-old kid working your way through high school,
matter.
You're gone.
You cannot say that because you have been brainwashed by the news that you are a hater, when in fact that is a pervasive idea across the world that marriage is between a man and a woman. And 10 years ago, even under Obama, you could say that. You can't now. Eventually, and you know something? That is what's going to separate the sheep from the goats. What do I mean by that? Certain bishops will capitulate to it. And what I mean by that—
The Germans already have.
Correct. And certain schools will capitulate to it, and some will not. And some, their land will be taken, meaning their property, and some will not. Now, granted, the church will never marry. I don't think that'll ever happen, but what will happen is persecution. But what I mean by that is certain things like their Catholic schools.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're already seeing that. I don't know if you could fire anybody now if they're gay in a Catholic school.
I think you can. But the problem also doesn't come with what they're able to do to the schools directly. Joe and I were talking before the show on the Crusade Channel, always on air and always online at crusadechannel.com. Joe and I were talking before the show. Think of it this way. What if you had a Catholic school in New Jersey? We were using Seton Hall Prep, for an example, or St. Benedict's, and they held strict to Catholic teaching. Okay, so if one of the boys at Seton Hall Prep wants to bring a boy to the prom, the answer is no.
Of course.
Okay, then they shut it down. They won't do anything to Seton Hall. You know what they'll do? They'll enlist their comrades in higher education, and they'll draw up lists. See, the one thing about the left is they hate lists, and they always criticize the Catholic Church over things like lists, like the syllabus of errors and things like that. They have their own lists, okay? They just won't let you know about them. They'll create a list, and they'll say to all their comrades in higher education, any kid applies to your school from any of these schools, any of these high schools, the answer is no. You shut them out. Whether it's Harvard, Yale, whether it's, and so many others across America, you say, these are the Catholic schools that don't buckle under and they don't want to bend their knee. Don't accept any of their kids.
And
that's a real possibility.
No, that'll happen. And that's what I mean by like bending your knee. Some will, some won't. I mean, we've already seen that with regard to abortifacients and basically paying for contraception through insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Some schools were on board with it,
right.
Catholic schools, and some are not. That is going to happen, and it's going to be through the same-sex issue. And like I said, that one isn't an overplay of the hand, and it's going nowhere. It's going nowhere.
You mean the fight against it?
Yes. That's here for a long, long time. Sad.
But true. It is sad. And again, getting back to scripture for a second, and I'm always reminded of this. Why is this able to flourish? Who's enabling this to flourish? The lukewarm. Those who say, it doesn't affect me. It will eventually, but at least in the moment, say, it doesn't affect me. I'm not interested. Jesus said, I will vomit them out of my mouth. See, he could work with hot and Jesus could work with cold, okay? Lukewarm people just don't care. And that's their sin.
It's funny.
Remember something? Jesus didn't say it's not. Jesus is saying lukewarmness is really, really bad.
Well, part of it is a lot of Catholics, I can't speak in the Protestant circles, they can't explain outside of that it's in the Bible why same-sex marriage is not good for society. You see, that's the root of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not good for society because a man and a woman has to raise a child. In marriage, the fruit of a child is children. It's not good for any society, and people don't know how to articulate that correctly. And frankly, that's why people say, well, let them just get married. Who cares?
Right.
It's not good.
Anyway, stick around to the front line with Joe and Joe on the Crusade Channel. Always on air, always online at crusadechannel.com. The last live radio station standing. The chat room's open. crusadechannel.com/chat. The only social media out there worth actually socializing in. Top of the hour, we got Dan Leroy. We're going to be talking about Catholic revolutionaries in America. So stick around.
I'll be sitting when the evening comes, oh, just watching the ships roll in. And then I'll watch them roll away again.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Frontline with Joe and Joe. Joe Pasillo and Joe Resinello, way in the breach on the Crusade Channel. Always on air and always online at crusadechannel.com, the last live radio station standing. Get in the chat room. The only social media out there worth actually socializing in is online at crusadechannel.com/chat. So as promised, we have Dan Leroy on the line. And Dan has written a new book, Liberty's Lions, The Catholic Revolutionaries Who Established America. And for those of you who don't know Dan, I just want to introduce him to our audience here at the Crusade Channel. Dan Leroy is an author, journalist, and teacher. He's been the director of writing and publishing, or the Department of Writing and Publishing, at Lincoln Park Performing Arts Charter School in Midland, Pennsylvania, since 2006. His writing about music and politics has appeared in the New York Times. We'll forgive you for that, Dan. Rolling Stone, Newsweek, The Village Voice, Alternative Press, Esquire.com, and National Review Online. Dan Leroy, welcome back to the Frontline with Joe and Joe.
Hey, Joe, it's my pleasure, and thank you for your forgiveness. Everybody needs a little bit of forgiveness at some point in the day, so thank you for doling out just a little bit there.
Yeah, listen, Dan, we all make our mistakes, but we forgive you, brother.
Dan, you're great, and thanks for the book. We interviewed Dan on Veritas Catholic Network. He sent me a nice book. I really appreciate it. I can't wait to read it from cover to cover. It's good stuff.
Hey, it's my pleasure.
Let's get right into it. Tell us a little about the endless sufferings of Catholics living in early America, Dan.
Well, I think the best way to start is to kind of go back a year ago for all of us to the spring of 2020, and the pandemic hits, and for a lot of us, we're cut off from the worship that we have come to know and love. The doors of the churches are closed. We can't celebrate Mass publicly. We're trying to figure out how to do this online and trying to be content with these, you know, fairly inferior alternatives. Doing that kind of gives us a little bit of a window into what things were like for these Catholics, because they also were not able to celebrate, in most cases, publicly. They had to celebrate Mass at people's houses. They had to go underground. They had to be served by circuit riders. That wasn't the worst of the sufferings by far, because all of these colonial Catholics were, no matter how much money they had, they were all second-class citizens. But the comparison that we can make between what happened to all of us last year, and is still happening, I guess, in some places, as a reminder of all of the things that these Catholics had to give up, I like to think about it, not because I like to remember it, but it's a good way to kind of put ourselves in those shoes and answer that question about, like, okay, this happened during colonial times, or what does this have to say to us today? Well, has a lot to say today, because it's one of many comparisons we can make between what these Catholics faced and what we all face right here in 2021.
But Dan, sadly, a lot of historians downgraded this suffering. They didn't cover it, basically. And another fact, and it is a fact, that great Catholics were crucial to America's founding. Why do you think the historians just downgraded that fact? It's not even taught.
It hasn't. Of course, I guess if you look at the bigger picture about history of all kinds, the history of all kinds is not being taught, and it hasn't been taught for a long time. And that certainly isn't trending in the right direction. As to why these Catholics have largely gotten shut out, I guess you could make one argument, which is the argument for doing this book. Having all of this stuff together, I hope, between two covers, instead of a little bit here, a little bit there, I would hope makes the case in a little more persuasive a way that, hey, these guys really were significant, and it was a book's worth, at least. You probably could have written a couple. A book's worth, at least, of contributions to our nation's independence. The other part of it, I suppose, is So we kind of have a Northeastern perspective on this era of history in particular. And so a lot of people who know anything about the Revolution know, you know, they know the big battles, they know the big names. But what they really don't know is the importance of Catholics in particular in other places. And one of those places is the Western frontier. I would guess that a lot of people don't get any of that stuff in school, if they get anything about the Revolution at all. And in particular, what Catholics did in the West really, really helped set up the big victories that everybody is familiar with in the East. So, you know, a little combination of a lot of things, old-fashioned prejudice, laziness, Northeast-centric teachings that has been the case for a long time. All of that stuff put together probably goes some way to explaining why Catholics haven't gotten their due for this era in history.
I'd also chalk it up. Dan Leroy's on the line, joining us at the Crusade Channel. Dan has written a new book, Liberty's Lions, The Catholic Revolutionaries Who Established America. Dan, I would also chalk it up to good old-fashioned political agendas. Seriously. You know, it's like, sure. it seems like modern historians, everyone's got an axe to grind. Everybody's got a political agenda. Rather than just tell the story, you know, and traditionally we know in Western civilization, you know, historians told the story. You know, without agendas, yeah. For the most part. That's all we're surrounded with now is agendas. But here's one of the things, you know, in their agenda that most people don't know. In your book, you state that George Washington actually knew these papists in quotes, who put their lives on the line, and he admired them. Talk about that with the Crusade Channel audience, Dan Leroy.
Absolutely, because Washington gets a chapter in Liberty's Lions, and he gets a chapter because, you know, he's very unlike all the other founders. And a lot of people would say, well, of course, he's unlike them because he's the father of our country. He was the leader of the Continental Army, et cetera, et cetera. But a part of that leadership that I don't think it's talked about enough is the attitude that Washington had toward Catholics in particular. And the, you know, if we can use this term, the very forward-looking way that he viewed their contributions, as opposed to people like John Adams and Alexander Hamilton and John Jay, who, among others, who were on record as, you know, being at best skeptical about the contributions of Catholics, and at worst, they said some pretty awful things, which have been captured in the historical record. Washington's different. Washington, just to give you one example, when Washington takes over the Continental Army, there has been, for a long time, a celebration called Pope's Night, and it takes place in Boston. It takes place throughout the colonies, especially the Northeastern colonies. It might sound like it's a Catholic thing, but it's not. It's actually a very anti-Catholic celebration, which is tied into the gunpowder plot in England. And it's really an excuse to burn effigies of the Pope, recite anti-Catholic limericks and songs. And it's really a very public and very sanctioned expression of anti-Catholicism. When Washington takes over the Continental Army, he puts a kibosh on this. He says, look, in so many words, we are trying to make common cause here. We're trying to essentially get ready to fight a revolution. We can't afford to alienate this group of people by doing silly things like having these celebrations. So knock it off. And they did. And that's something that Catholics remembered. Washington wasn't just a guy who talked the talk. He also walked the walk. That's an example of it.
Excellent. You're at the front line with Joe and Joe, and we have Dan Leroy on the phone, and we're discussing his new book, Liberty's Lions, The Catholic Revolutionaries Who Established America.
Well, there were two Catholic carols, Dan, in this tale. And, I you know, we spoke with Dan, like we said earlier, and you told a great story, I thought, with the one who was a cleric and Ben Franklin. Could you tell us about that? Because I think it had a huge impact on our country in an indirect way.
Absolutely. John Carroll, who later would become the first Catholic bishop in America and later the first Catholic archbishop, He was a Jesuit. He was living in Europe. The Jesuits were, the order was disbanded, and John Carroll kind of found himself unexpectedly coming back to his home in America, and he was approached by Congress. They were looking for a way to kind of patch up relations between the United States and French Canadians, and they put a delegation together to send to Canada to try to convince the French Canadians to join the revolution or at least stay neutral, sit it out. So this delegation consisted of John Carroll, Father John Carroll, his cousin Charles Carroll of Carrollton, who was the other really significant Catholic Carroll, and it consisted of Benjamin Franklin. The delegation went to Canada. The trip was not, at least in the short term, a great success, and there are a lot of reasons for that. But what happened as a result of this trip was that Benjamin Franklin, who, you know, he's significantly aged at this point and traveling as a trial, and he just went to Canada, and he doesn't think he did any good, and he's fed up, and he wants to go back home because he has gout and a host of other ailments. And Father John Carroll followed behind him and actually arranged for them to travel together. He took care of Benjamin Franklin on the trip home and was very solicitous of his health. And Benjamin Franklin never forgot these very simple kindnesses that Father Carroll performed for him on the trip back. So years later, after the Revolution, when Benjamin Franklin plays a pretty significant role in working with the Vatican to try to get the first American bishop named, John Carroll is the guy, because Benjamin Franklin remembers his kindnesses. He remembers what outstanding character he thought Father John Carroll possessed. And Father John Carroll was the right guy for the right job at the right time. Had this trip not happened, had he not gotten on Benjamin Franklin's radar, we might have had a very different first bishop, or who knows, no bishop at all, I guess, in some tellings of the tale. Americans weren't all that crazy about the idea of bishops at this time anyway. So Benjamin Franklin, even though a lot of people don't know it, played a very, very significant role in picking the first head of the Catholic Church here in America, and John Carroll did an amazing job really getting the church on its footing here in this new nation of America.
Excellent. Dan Leroy, author of the book Liberty's Lions, The Catholic Revolutionaries Who Established America. Dan, what role did American Catholics play in the first slave revolt?
Well, the first slave revolt, the first significant slave revolt, really from the founding of the colonies up until the American Revolution, was in 1739 in Stono, South Carolina. And the slaves who revolted, many of them, we believe, were Congolese, and they were also Catholics, and they venerated the Virgin Mary. And the prologue of Liberty's Lions talks about some of the interpretations of the Catholic content of this revolt. And while there's a lot that we don't know for certain, because we don't have records of things from the slaves' perspective, it seems pretty clear that a significant portion of these slaves, again, were Congolese, they were Catholic, and that their faith did play some role in the way that they chose the date for the revolt, and some of the things that happened during the revolt, which kind of have some vestiges of Marian devotion. Now, the slave revolt didn't end that well. A lot of these slaves ended up being massacred or captured. There were a few that probably did manage to escape to Spanish Florida. But, you know, as a revolt, it was not a success. And furthermore, it was a pretty bloody and a not uncomplicated story, as was true of pretty much any slave revolt and anything to do with slavery. But it is a really interesting window into this kind of intertwined relationship between Catholicism and slavery during the colonial period.
Dan, let's talk a little bit about the foreign Catholics that influenced our early history. Let's start with the Poles.
Absolutely. Well, there are two who were very significant. Kazimierz Pulaski, who is known as the founder of the American cavalry and was an incredible horseman, saved Washington's life at the Battle of Brandywine and probably saved the entire revolution by saving Washington's life, because Washington was moments away from capture before Pulaski and his cavalry distracted the British Army and prevented them from capturing Washington. And then the other significant Polish patriot was Thaddeus Kosciuszko, who was a great engineer. He was brought here and helped construct West Point. It's kind of his design, gave Washington this fortress on the banks of the Hudson River that he had always coveted. Kosciuszko later served in the South, and among other things, his engineering expertise allowed him to build a series of flatboats that allowed the Patriot Army to stay just out of reach of the British. And that was really significant, because while the American Army didn't win any real battles in the Southern theater, the thing that they did was a war of attrition. They were able to wear Cornwallis's army out, stay just a step ahead of them, and Thaddeus Kosciuszko was a huge part of that. And since we were just talking about slavery, he was also a guy who was a great friend of Thomas Jefferson and really could not figure out the dichotomy between the Jefferson who wrote the Declaration of Independence and then the Jefferson who owned slaves. He wanted Jefferson to free his slaves, and he put up all the money that he earned serving in the Continental Army during the American Revolution, but it still didn't happen, which is a story that I get into in a little bit more detail about why that did not occur in Liberty's Lion.
And Dan, just real quick, Dan LaRoy is on the phone, and we're talking about his book, The Catholic Revolutionaries Who Established America. Dan, so what are your thoughts? I mean, you're at the front line with Joe and Joe, so you know you're going to get into a little bit of trouble with us, Dan. What are your thoughts? One final question before we go, and I want to leave a minute, Dan. Make sure at the end of your answer, you let people know where they can find your book, and most importantly, buy your book. What are your thoughts on what's going on right now in America? Because obviously we have an anti-Catholic ethos right now. It seems to be particularly coming from the left. We see that in this woke culture, people who view marriage solely between one man and one woman. What are your thoughts on what's going on now from the Catholic point of view?
Well, here's what I think, and here's how I would tie it back into these stories that appear in Liberty's Lion. To be Catholic involves two things for sure. You're called to sacrifice, and you're called to suffer. And in fact, for Catholics, sacrifice and suffering aren't bugs, they're features. And we got to remember the example of these colonial Catholics who also were called to sacrifice and suffer and did so in a number of ways. And they have to be the example for us as we look to what's ahead. And what's ahead could look a lot like what these colonial Catholics went through, living life as second-class citizens, maybe having to have this right to worship that we have come to cherish. Is that guaranteed? I don't know if it's guaranteed. There are examples in this book about what people went through that I would hope, even though it's not the best news to give, and I suppose we're not ending this on a super uplifting moment, but there are examples here for what's coming for all of us. And if there's anything that this book can do to inspire, then I hope it would inspire people to look and see what these people had to undergo to get us to where we are today. We can get back to that same place, but to get there, we're going to have to go through the crucible, I think, and I hope this book can, in some small way, help people get there. And if you're interested and getting a copy of the book, then you can get it from SophiaInstitute.com. That is the publisher. You can also get it from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, the usual outlets. Or you can go to Dan Leroy, that's Leroy.com, and get a personally inscribed copy. I'll be glad to sign one and ship it right out to you.
Dan, if you'd be so kind and wait at the end of the break, I'd like to, if you'd talk about the French Catholics, particularly the Marquis's wife. You talked about ending it on a bad note. I want to end it on a good note, but we have to take a break in a little bit.
Dan Leroy, we got about 4 minutes, so go ahead. You can comment on that.
Okay. Well, everybody knows, I think, the Marquis de Lafayette. He was a great hero, the hero of two worlds, here in America and in France. What he really wasn't was a great Catholic by his own admission. But his wife was a great Catholic. His wife was every bit the hero that Lafayette was. His wife, among other things, was willing, for her love for Lafayette and their family, was willing to take their two daughters after Lafayette had been imprisoned following the French Revolution. She took their two daughters, presented herself at the prison, said, "Hey, our family's been split up long enough. We are going to be together. Let us in." And they spent a couple of years in prison together because she did not want the family broken up as it had been by two revolutions. And she never stopped fighting for the soul of her husband. And we don't know whether she was successful in converting him back to the faith, but we do know that right up until her dying breath, that was her mission. She was very much like Saint Monica, trying to reel in Saint Augustine. And again, if she wasn't successful, it was through no lack of trying. If there's a saint in this book, Liberty's Lions, as it's said somewhere, maybe I said it, if there's a saint somewhere in this book, that's her. That is the Marquise de Lafayette.
Awesome. Awesome. Dan Leroy, thanks again, brother, for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. We emphasize to the Crusade Channel audience out there, Crusade Channel, always on air, always online at crusadechannel.com, the last live radio station standing. Go out and buy Dan's book. Joe has it. He's going to read it. Then he's going to give it to me, and I'm going to read it. Liberty's Lions, the Catholic Revolutionaries Who Established America. You could buy that at Sophia Institute Press. And as Dan said, Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble. Hey, just like everything else now, Joe Rissanello, just Google it. You'll find it.
But go direct. We talk about buying local. Go directly to Dan's website.
Yeah, go to Dan's website. This way, screw Amazon.
Exactly.
If we can put that by. Dan Leroy, thanks for coming on the show, brother. Always a pleasure, and we'll be talking to you soon.
Joe and Joe, it's my pleasure. I hope you guys have a wonderful rest of the evening. God bless.
God bless you, my
Peace.
Man. So, yeah, Dan Leroy. I mean, a lot of people, quite frankly, Joe Rissano, I mean, in all my education, if I went, I did not, other than learning about the Know-Nothing Party, okay, at some point in the 19th century, I didn't know much. I didn't hear much about, I think I was taught in one class at one time at Seton Hall Prep about the only Catholic who signed the Declaration of Independence.
Carroll.
Was it Carroll?
Yeah.
He's the only, you don't hear about these things. Again, we're talking to Dan Leroy. We're talking to Dan Leroy about his book. We need to educate ourselves on our role, not just in the American founding, but our role in the whole, and let's say, for argument's sake, the whole discovering of North America. I mean, obviously, there were Catholics in Quebec. There were Catholics in the South. There were Catholics. Junipero Serra, whose statue was torn down last year in California. The man in his order civilized California. Every freaking name of every city in California is named after a saint or a Catholic name of some kind. My larger point, Joe Rissanello, we need to educate ourselves on these things.
And now California has Caitlin DeBruce.
That's right. Caitlin DeBruce. I like it. You just made up a good one. Listen, we'll be back after the break. Stick around with the front line with Joe and Joe.
Leaves are falling all around. Time I was on my way. To you, I'm much obliged. Such a pleasant stay. But now it's time for me to. I'm no longer. Well,
Welcome back, everyone, to the Front Line with Joe and Joe. Joe Pasillo and Joe Resinello, and we are in the breach on the Crusade Channel, always on air and always online at CrusadeChannel.com, the last live radio station standing. Get in the chat room at CrusadeChannel.com/chat, the only social media out there worth actually socializing in. We have one more segment. We don't know how many stories we're going to get to, but this one Joe and I wanted to talk about. I like Joe Resinello. I like Victor Davis Hanson. I do. I like his style. I like the things he talks about. I think he's spot on. I don't think he has a political agenda. I think he's an American. He's American. In other words, he's a guy who says, just quite bluntly, you know what? Things are really screwed up. He says it in a much more intellectual way than I do. But he titled his article, American Universities Have Lost Their Prestige. When I sent that article to Joe Resinello and said, hey, Joe, I want to talk about this, I titled it, American Universities Suck. All right? And I think that he's right and I'm right. So let's talk about it.
But even like before we get into Hanson talking about American universities, I would break down college students right now into three buckets.
I can't wait. Wait a minute. Hold on. I'm going to gird myself. Go ahead, Joe Resinello.
These are the three buckets. A third of the people that go to colleges in America shouldn't be there. They have no business being in college. Mm-hmm. Honestly, this is my own observation. The other third do belong in college, but they're studying things that will not get you a job. They won't employ you. Like, for instance,
gender studies.
Let's even take it a little higher. Sociology. What are you going to do with that? You're studying now. If you went to, let me rephrase it. If you study, I study political science. I had to get a graduate degree. That's why I work in a bank. If you take one of those studies, psychology, and you study that at Rutgers, you can't get a job. You're not getting a job. But if you study psychology at Yale, Goldman Sachs may hire you because they just know you're smart and you went to Yale. Right. So that's a little different.
Yeah, they'll teach you banking.
But my point, because it's clear you're very smart. But my point is, again, that's the other third. They're smart. They study things that basically you can't get a job. And then there's the third that go to college and study things and they can get a job and or they go to a very, very prestigious school and it's just implied that they're brilliant and they're going to get hired. College, you want to talk about the Great Reset, and then we'll circle back mm-hmm. to this article.
You're not allowed to use the word circle back.
Oh, I know.
That's a Jen Psaki-ism. You're banned. I told you, you can't do no circling back, but go ahead.
But in terms of college itself, has to be re-looked at. I was telling Joe this weekend, I was running some errands in the town that I grew up in, and I see like a parent on a car. They had like Iona parent alumni, like Iona College. It's a school up in New York State. It's a Catholic school. Why would you pay the premium to – and I'm not picking on Iona College. It's a decent college. I actually work with someone who went to Iona. He's a smart guy. But the point is, why would you pay $50,000 to $60,000 a year to send your kid to Iona? Why would you pay $50,000 to $60,000 a year to send your kid to University of Scranton? That's where I went. What's the premium? Is it authentically Catholic? Well, I would say, to be honestly, sadly, probably not. I mean, are there elements of Catholicism there? Absolutely. I went there. I used to go to church. I mean, I'm surprised I wasn't struck by lightning when I went to church at University of Scranton. But at the same time, there are elements of it. But what's the premium of sending your kid there? Most, again, probably about a third of the colleges in America should just close. And here's another thing, which sadly, kids don't get the proper guidance. If you're a middle-class kid, or even an upper-middle-class kid, you don't go to college to get educated. I got news for you. You go to college to get a job. Like my kids, I didn't tell you folks this, I'm expecting my fifth kid. I have four kids.
God bless you, brother.
So, I mean, like, I have to educate five kids. I am not rich. I have to send my kids to school so they can get a job. Like, they're not going to get a trust. So these kids are not basically given the proper guidance. If you're a middle class kid, say your dad works at UPS, he busses ass, and maybe he has two jobs, and he has three kids. You don't study sociology at your local state school. and take $200,000 worth of debt to do it, because you're not going to get a job.
That's a really bad idea.
You study accounting. Well, I don't want to be an accountant. Well, listen, son, I'm not sending you there to get educated. Sadly. Because I'm not rich. You're already educated. You're going there to get a job, to be trained for something. Mm-hmm. That's a practical perspective, and it's not viewed that way. Too many kids who come from middle-class families, who come from upper-middle-class families for that matter, they're like, yeah, but my son, he wants to study... I don't even know.
Renaissance art.
No, the answer is no, because you're not going to get a job. You're going to be super smart. You're going to be able to talk to people at a cocktail party, but Renaissance art is not going to pay your debt back. And you're going into debt to study something that, frankly, only rich people can study. If you're rich and daddy's going to pay for that, good for you. You see, it has to be relooked at. My wife and I talk about this all the time. Americans don't do that. Sadly, too many people think I could do anything I want in life. Yes, to a degree in this country you can, but you're going to pay for it. And what's been proven is you can't get a job.
Who needs the guidance, Joe Racinello, the kid or the parents? I think the parents need the guidance.
Zeke just put something in the chat room, and I love it. He said, I agree. Each of my kids who went to college had to provide me with a spreadsheet with the cost of tuition, annual anticipated salary, percentage of graduate placed, etc., to prove to me that it was a good investment in the future. You see, he gets it. This dude gets it. You see, I don't know. Maybe Zeke is rich. You know, I'm not. I'll just say for me, if you're not rich, you're middle class or upper middle class, you go to college to get a job. Now, if you are Jamie Dimon's kid, Jamie Dimon is the CEO of JP Morgan, and you want to study French literature or comparative literature or some like esoteric thing, good for you. Daddy's paying for it. You don't have to work. Well, if you're Joe Racinello's kid, you have to work.
Do you remember the movie Groundhog Day with Bill Murray? All right. By the way, Bill Murray, who's showing signs that he really like, he's made a lot of very, because he's Catholic, Bill Murray. He's said things like, yeah, I don't know why we don't like have the traditional Latin mass anymore. Anyway, Groundhog Day, right? It's so funny. He's trying to make Mouchard. He's trying to hit on, what's her name, Andy McDowell. And in one of the conversations he has, he says, so what did you study in school? She said, I studied 19th century French poetry. What a waste of time.
Well, that
was Bill Murray's response. He goes, ha, what a waste of time. He didn't get the date the next day in Groundhog Day. He had to rephrase that, and he starts quoting French poetry from the 19th century. But that, honestly, that is the response. The only thing I will say to you is this. If, and I don't think it's a great bargain either, and Zeke, you know, gives a good example. You got to show anticipated salary and all this kind of stuff. You take some of these topics. The only real thing, if you consider it real, that you could actually do with them is teach. Do you know what I mean? Like, my sister was a philosophy major. My sister's a very intelligent woman, okay? She went to Fordham. She studied philosophy. She's a teacher. She ain't doing anything else with the philosophy degree, if you know what I mean. Same with a lot of these things that you can study. They're very interesting, I think.
Of course they are.
But you know what they are at the end of the day? And I think this is where parents need to get educated. These are electives. They're not the things you study when you go to school as your core that you're going to actually go out and get a job, like you said, okay? They're electives. They're where you learn something that you're not going to learn anywhere else, and you do it in school. But it's an elective. You don't make that one of your... You don't make 19th century French poetry or Renaissance art. You don't make that your major. You ain't going to do anything with it, and I said earlier, other than teach. But if you're not going to teach... You need to do something else.
But the problem is, yes, you can teach, but then again, look at the salary of a teacher versus the debt you just took on. You see, that's what's missing here.
And you, by the way, I just want to digress for 1 second. And you got to play the game. My sister's 45 years old. Okay, 44 years old. My sister still doesn't have a tenure track because she doesn't play their stupid games either. So if you just think you're going to be brilliant in philosophy or 19th century French poetry, if you don't play their game and if you don't toe their... My sister's a victim of it. I want her to come on the show, but she won't. In other words, and do a show with us to talk about education and the state of education. She has a lot of insight. She won't do it because she doesn't want to get canceled from her adjuncting positions, which she fears that may very well happen. I don't begrudge her for it. She's got a little baby and everything. My point is, so not only can you, you could say I'm going to become a teacher, but unless you toe the line and support the agenda, that might not happen for you either.
But if you're going to be a teacher, you go to a state school and limit your debt. You see, this is where I have a PhD in common sense.
You do.
Because my father was a barber and my mother was a secretary. So I get it. I knew if I didn't get a degree, that's why I had to go back, but I paid for it myself, I wasn't going to basically be employed. I don't have a trust fund. You see, this is where the common sense is completely out the window. And, you know, here's another thing, and this is going to be a little controversial, but we're going to go there. You talk about some of the authentic Catholic schools, and if I, you know, I'm going to give my kids options, and there are schools like Christendom College, Franciscan University, Belmont Abbey in North Carolina. They're good Catholic schools. There's a Newman list. Are they perfect? No. No one's perfect. No school's perfect. We could throw scones on everything. But they are as good as you're probably going to get in America. But here's another thing. I've met these kids sometimes because I've done certain things with like the Franciscan Friars of the Renewal. Go on a pilgrimage. You meet some of these young kids. You talk to them. And you'll meet some guy. He'll be like going to Franciscan. Nice kid. Super nice kid. He's like, yeah, I'm a junior at Franciscan. What are you studying? Mariology. And I'd say to myself, I mean, I wouldn't say anything to the kid, but I'd say to myself, all right, are you going to become a priest? And the kid, you know, like,
right.
And the kid's like, well, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do. No, wrong. Who advises a boy or a girl to study Mariology, frankly, at Franciscan at $50,000 a pop, which means if your parents aren't rich, you're taking out loans. What are you going to do?
Right.
You're going to work at a Catholic school and make $25,000 an hour. A year, and you're going to be in debt forever.
Right.
You don't study that. Listen, if you want to study about Mary, pray the rosary every day and read books on your own. You see, these are decisions that I sometimes, and parents allow their kids to make them. I say to myself, again, I'm not claiming to be a genius, but I say to this kid in my head, you're studying Mariology at $200,000 for 4 years of an education and you don't want to be a priest. I got news for you. If you have debt, they won't even take you in a seminary. They don't do that in New Jersey. You have to have no debt to go into a seminary in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't even become a priest if you're in debt.
Yeah, it's completely misguided. People have to understand, you got to live in the real world with this stuff. That's why we were talking before the show. We were talking about, you know what Catholic schools should do, Joe Racinello, that was on the high school level? Catholic schools should build a wing, and they have a lot of money. They have a lot of alumni, okay? Joe and I both went to Catholic high school. They should build new buildings on their campuses to teach kids trades. So that it's for kids that are not, that are going to get a Catholic education, then you teach them plumbing, to be an electrician, to be a contractor, to be a mason, things where they can go out and start a business and make $1 million a year to get it through their heads. It's not all about just going to Wall Street or going to work for a big law firm or going to work for a big accounting firm. If I had a nickel for every kid that sat in a class when I was at Seton Hall University in 1990, okay, 1989, 1990, that said, when the professor said, what are your goals? I want to work for a big five accounting firm. Oh, please, give me a break. Every one of you want to work for a big five accounting firm? There aren't enough jobs for everybody in the classroom that wants to go to work. My point is, like you said, not everybody's equipped to go to college. I do think that kids should get an education.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not saying that. And There are schools that you can go to that are reasonable.
Right.
But you see, that's where people, and Joe and I were talking about this before the show, parents buy into the prestige. They want their kid. Oh, my kid goes to Villanova at $70,000 a year. What's he studying? History. Great degree. I minored in history. Guess what? He's going to come out shackled with debt. You, sir, work for UPS. He's going to be living in your basement till you're 40 years old. He's not going to get a job. And if he wants to get a job, he then has to go to law school and take on more debt.
Right.
It's not, why? Because it's about, oh, my kid goes to Villanova. He's a smart kid. Yeah, I get it, but you're not rich. And the real world requires cash. Cash. Things cost money. Things cost money. And people don't get it. And college, and this is what this article kind of touches upon, it's too expensive. People have to, listen, if you're a middle class person, if you get anything out of this conversation, if you're a middle class person or an upper middle class person, and you're going to go to college, and you're going to take on debt, you better study something that you're going to get a job. Oh, I don't want to be an accountant. Well, guess what? Accountants get jobs. Guess what? French literature people make $25,000 an hour teaching at a charter school, and you're never going to pay your debt back, and you're going to live in the basement next to Joe and Joe's studio.
And on top of it, and that was Victor Davis Hanson's article, on top of it, these places are a mess, and that's why he wrote the article. And he was basically saying, I mean, I like that. We only have a few minutes left, but I like some of the ones that he phrased, Joe Rossinello. You could comment. I mean, these are classic. That's, again, why I like Victor Davis Hanson. He said, imagine a place where the certification of educational excellence, the Bachelor of Arts degree, is no guarantee that a graduate can speak, write, or communicate coherently or think inductively. Now, there's a few of those. Think about that. That you can't. You can't think in your mind. If you're an objective person, and we live in the real world, all right? We're objective people. You can't tell me that if so-and-so says, well, I went to college and I have a Bachelor of Arts, you're not going to tell me that you automatically assume that that person could read and write and communicate effectively. I don't. Somebody tells me they went to college. I know high school kids have got more that have better grammar and better communication skills and speak more effectively than, let's say, kids with Bachelor of Arts degrees now. He's right about that. You can't assume anything. You know what also that? My brother. I bring up my brother. I bring up my sister. I bring up my brother. They both went to better schools than me. But my brother went to Yale. My brother said, Joe, there's no guarantee because somebody says they went to Yale that you could consider them absolutely an educated person. And he goes, and I went there. I know, I went to school with a lot of them. And that's a shame. That's a failure on their part. And it's, as you said, Joe Rossinello, but the value that we're placing on just saying that you went to the school. Well, wait a minute. What about the fact that your kid doesn't even know how to use simple logic? You spent 300 grand sending your kid to Boston College for 4 years, and you can't even say your kid knows how to think logically to put together a coherent argument.
Or
about
better
anything.
Yet, they go there. And they lose their faith.
Oh, that's even, well, that's, I mean, a whole other, I mean, conversation.
That's correct.
Got to spend $300,000 to send your kid to Boston College so that they lose the faith? Let me tell you something. Now that you got my blood boiling, right? My sister, all right, and again, she is Catholic. I'm not going to judge her, and she's moving closer and closer back to the faith that she was brought up in, okay? My sister went to Catholic grammar school, Catholic high school, and Catholic college. When she graduated, she was a self-identified Buddhist, okay? I'm not supposed to want to go to Mount St. Dominic and grab some of those nuns that supposedly educated her back in the day and say, what are you doing, sister? What are you teaching these girls, okay? Because they were on the campus with Caldwell College, which was a radically feminist college over in
sure,
Caldwell.
I know it.
In other words, how do you allow this to happen to Catholic girls? You know, you have to ask yourself that question too about Catholic college. Fordham, listen, Father Blessingale is on the faculty of Fordham, and he says, I'm gay and I'm
black.
A priest.
The head of the theology department.
Right. But
how is that possible?
Right.
That's a conversation for another day.
And about Catholic education.
And I may lose my mind. But again, here's another thing. We talk about money moves the dial. Why would you pay a premium for that if you're a Catholic parent? Think about that for a second. I'm going to spend close to $80,000 a year. I don't want to pick on Fordham, but let's stick with Fordham.
Stick with
for
Fordham.
That, madam. Why am I going to spend all that money? I mean, the premium, what's the difference between Fordham and, let's just say, Rutgers? The difference, in my view, is you're going to get a Catholic education. And in some universities, like take Christendom College in Virginia or, say, Belmont Abbey in North Carolina, I might say, well, you know, it's a little bit more money, but you know something? My kid's going to get formed right. They're going to meet nice Catholic friends. And you know something? If it's my daughter, maybe she'll meet, you know, a husband. Maybe she'll get married to a nice Catholic guy. It's an investment. But if I'm dealing with nonsense. Where's the premium? And here's the thing. Parents do it constantly. And then they look at their kid that's living in the basement. The kid's 38 years old. They can't get a job because they didn't study anything that would employ them. And they owe a ridiculous amount of money. It makes no sense.
I know, and that's the thing. And you try to make sense of it, and you can't. Now, we got a couple minutes left, so I want to just paint the little picture for the Crusade Channel audience, because these are funny. They're funny because they're true. And the whole article, I would encourage anybody to go read it. It's on PJ Media, Victor Davis Hanson. Now, these are funny, Joe Rasinello, so chime in anytime you want. Imagine a place supposedly devoted to equity, where only 30% of the faculty are privileged enough to be tenure-tracked. Doesn't sound like a lot of equity now, does it? This was one of my favorite ones. Imagine a place where, quote, diversity is the professed institutional ethos, while studies reveal that liberal faculty outnumber their conservative counterparts by over 10 to 1. But you see what he's trying to say here more than anything else, and we could go on about that. It's just so much BS. And it'd be one thing if you're able to sit back like you and I are doing now, all right, and we're speaking to the Crusade Channel audience, right, saying, and you know what? It's a bunch of BS. I want to go back to what you said. We're paying through the nose for this.
It's crippling.
And it's all BS. Let me tell you something. You take a kid who's got some smarts, you send them to Montclair State College, okay, over here.
It's a local school.
All right, it's a local school. He can come out and conquer the world.
Oh, there's no doubt about it.
Come out and conquer the world. And doesn't have to go for 60, 70 grand a year. And that goes for a lot of schools. If you have the smarts and you find a school that's going to educate your kids properly, a real education, okay, I don't care where you go. You come out, you conquer the world. You don't need to spend all this money on these places that basically what Victor Davis Hanson is doing is describing as a big joke.
Well, it's a joke. It's a scam.
A sad one.
It's a scam too. It's a scam.
Because remember, one of the things he makes a point about is that imagine a liberal place that has upped its tuition and total cost far beyond the rate of inflation, with its graduates now collectively owing $1.7 trillion in student loan debt. Joe Rasinello, that's a scam. That's all
but
that
where
is.
Where are guidance counselors in schools? You know, this is both in Catholic and public schools. Where are they? You know, some parents don't know any better, sadly.
Right.
They don't know any better. Where are they? They allow, and here's another thing. Well, the banks don't care because they just say, give me the money. I'll give you the
money.
Well,
there's usurious compound interest being charged on that debt.
They don't care.
Let's end it there. We love you guys on the Crusade Channel. Always on air, always online at crusadechannel.com. The last live radio station standing. Remember to follow Joe and I on Facebook and YouTube until they shut us down. Of course, you find us at the front line with Joe and Joe. And remember, until next week, that our conversation is your conversation. And that conversation, well, that's going on everywhere. We'll talk to you guys soon.